Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Eisner Award-winning artist Peter Cooper, author of numerous books, editorial cartoons, magazine covers, and other illustrations. And tonight we're talking about his new book, Wish We Weren't Here, Postcards from the Apocalypse. Peter, welcome back to the show. It is a pleasure to talk to you about your new book, as depressing as it is. Wish We Weren't Here. It was funny when I finished it. I said, this is a real Gila monster of a book in that it's both beautiful but deadly.
I like the climate, I guess.
Yeah, but this is like deadly to say this, but it is an important book. But it's actually more entertaining than you think it would be. I think it's a dynamite book. Talk to me about coming up with the format, because it's you've constrained yourself to four cubes arranged in a cube. Have you used that format before?
I varied. So the original strip it was a vertical that I do every week for the French magazine Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah.
And so it runs, your eye goes down the page looking at it, and it sits in the environmental section in Charlie Hebdo every week. It's wordless. I don't speak French. I also happen to be enamored with wordless comics and just what you can do with the form. And I think that it's really appropriate for talking about this subject matter, because it's heavy enough without having a didactic overlay of text, either scolding or all the different things that text might do. But I do include in the book the reference to the news article that inspired the piece or whatever was that inspired it, so readers can see the four-panel wordless comic, and then below it is text that goes to one website or another, The Guardian, The Washington Post, New York Times, the different sources, so that you can look into what the subject matter is more deeply.
I do want to mention, for the benefit of the audience, is that the last several of them really is about the rebellion.
I'm trying, I do occasionally get a powerful, positive notion that I want to put into this, and I really want to go in that direction as much as I can, but I feel like that it's important. The warning signal of this is also important, and that I'm really waving my arms around and also trying to connect with people who recognize the climate change problems. Jeez. And who are not in the midst of calling it a hoax or trying to erase it. And for those that feel that way, I'm hoping that this is an injection of some reality that will help to maybe move the dial a bit.
Well, I want to talk about that, because you write about that in the beginning of this book, about doing political art or art with a purpose. First of all, I love the fact that you dedicate this book to Jules Pfeiffer, 1929 to 2025, the Fred Astaire of political art. Did you make that up?
I did.
It's like stuck in my head now.
Good. Well, he was a friend of mine, and over the years he was an important mentor figure, and his work was always a mentor figure even before I knew him. But he loved Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, and he did many a drawing of dancers.
That's right.
And so it stuck as being something, an appropriate way to frame his position in political art, and because he was sort of in some ways dancing with the subject matter, and in some ways he was kicking it in the groin. So with a top hat on.
It's amazing, because I'm sure many people today don't even think about or know who he is or even remember him, but he was such an important figure in political art, and his stuff appeared in a variety of places too. And I just
and it was unlike, and he was he did so many different things.
Well, yeah, even his the line of his drawings was very light, and sort of supple, and go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I think he was like Shel Silverstein.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There was a number of people that, but really, he was Jules Pfeiffer, and he in many ways reinvented the form. He dropped word balloon. His regular strip that ran in the Village Voice didn't have word balloons, and people were like, it's not a comic, it's more like a play. And then he wrote plays, and they say, it's not like a play, it's more like a comic. And he danced between these forms and gave me a lot of ideas about, you know, what one could do with it. And one of the things that he did that I hope I followed through on was also looking at oneself. You know, there was a lot right. of introspection and looking at how we all handle, you know, before I get on my high horse about like getting everything, you know, like telling somebody else they should do, you know, change their behavior. One of the strips I have in Wish We Weren't Here shows a guy with a worried expression on his face looking at his phone, and there's the constant polar bear on the melting ice cap. Then he's looking at his computer, and there's the temperature and drought image. And then he's looking at a bigger screen TV, and there's the flames of a forest fire. And then the last panel shows all the electrical outlets that have to be plugged in order to be running all the energy that we do while we're looking at these things, and how we participate, unfortunately, in the you know, we're energy users, especially here in the United States.
The layout is really interesting because it really invites the eye to pore over it like it was a storyboard for future film or animation. And there's something really good about it. It's solid. You know, you have four squares in a square, and there's something about it that's just interesting. It's really fascinating and enjoyable. And like
it's,
I said,
yeah, it's an eight by eight inch book, and
is it
reformatted?
Go ahead.
I reformatted the vertical wasn't in good shape for a book, and so I reformatted it to this square format, and then I have syndicated it in the United States, and so that it runs as these four panel image, which goes more with the way, you know, magazines, newspapers, and people looking on their phones tend to read, although the vertical also works that way too. And since these things go across medium these days, but for the most part, this turning into a square format certainly worked for a book rather than a vertical
one. And the book itself is square.
Yes, it's a square book, and you know, I think that it's a nice size to hold in your hand and big enough to see the images clearly. But I tried to, you know, make this sort of poetic. I mean, I'm talking about this heavy subject matter, but I tried to do it in ways that were kind of for the reader viewing a puzzle. And you know, you see the first panel, say, for example, you see a fireman with a fire hose blasting away at the flames. As it pulls back, you're seeing it's a bigger forest fire. As you pull back, you see the fire truck. And as you pull back further, the last shot shows that the truck is actually an Exxon Mobil truck. And so he's spraying gas, or I should say the companies are spraying gas on the fire. And that these kinds of, you know, to try to think about talking about the subject matter and conveying it in a way that will be a little bit surprising for the reader and be, you know, sort of in some ways the way a New Yorker cartoon works, where the best New Yorker cartoons, the reader can look at the image, read the caption, have a moment's pause, and then they connect the dots in their own head.
Right.
So it's participatory.
I'm really interested in your introduction writing. Because you write about, and I've thought about this a lot, about sometimes feeling futile. I mean, who am I? You're writing and drawing about apocalyptic work to warn of this huge existential threat that we're living through. And I have to ask you, so what continues to motivate you to do this? I mean, do you really feel comics, cartoons still can have the impact that they have through the ages?
Well, I think now more than ever, where everything is kind of up for grabs, you look at a photograph and you're not sure if it's been, you know, AI created or a video. There's so many things that are that are being put forward as being, you know, is this real or isn't it real? And we're having trouble judging what is actual, and that's being fueled by a jet stream of lies coming from the very top of our government. And I think that art has the ability, you recognize that this is one person's point of view and that they're expressing something, and that it's not trying to fool the eye in many ways, or be information that is not my own take on things. And then, you know, you can take it or leave it, but you know that it's coming from an individual's perspective. And I'm not sales pitching this, but I am trying to convey what I see, and that then you can put together with that whether you're having the same experience. And I think right now we really need to come together on that collective vision of reality, because it's being so obfuscated that it's really easy to feel utterly unsure about what is actually real. And when it comes to something like climate change, you know, we're having direct experience with it, and so I'm flummoxed by the idea that anybody can call it a hoax, and you just say that you're just not perceiving what you're perceiving. You know, when you go outside, or you know, that smoke in the sky isn't really a fire. It's like, well, yeah, obviously it is. And so I think that it can be very useful. Art can really play an important role at this juncture.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, but also for me, it's just the basic, are you just going to go through your life and not do anything? And the thing that's available to you is art. And how could you go through your life and not protest against this ultimate threat?
Well, also, you know, part of it for me is I have been motivated since I was a child by I saw the movie Failsafe. I may have mentioned this in another.
I just watched that the other day.
Oh, really? Wow.
It was on TCM. It was on TCM.
Oh, that is funny. That's a small world moment. And I saw that when I was 8, and
went,
you know, climbed into bed with a cold sweat, thinking, like, at the end of the movie, for those that don't know it, it's a Cold War movie about we accidentally bomb Russia with a new nuclear bomb. And in order to avoid World War III, we say, okay, you can bomb one U.S. city, and we'll just take that as our, you know, slap on the wrist, as it were, so that we don't go to full-scale war. And Russia bombs New York, which is where I want to move from Cleveland. And I was just the horror of, like, wow, there exists this weapon that can essentially blow up the world. And I, you know, that was where I discovered that. Well, that stayed with me in kind of the background. And it's been a real motivator. I'm always like, you know, I have to go through puberty before they drop the bomb. I have to, you know, get my first girlfriend. I have to go to art school. I have to get this book published.
I so identify with this, Peter.
Well, you know, and now I'm, you know, there's, I have, you know, choose your own adventures of doom to motivate me this way. It's like, you know, is it going to be an AI thing? Will it climate change? Or, you know, what, all the different things. And that happily for me, and I hope for other people will do the same, rather than being something that petrifies me, it tends to make me be really proactive. And so I work a lot because I feel like this, you know, an ongoing, because I can draw these things, because I'm capable of expressing these ideas, every time I hit that wall where I do start to feel like, I said this in my introduction, it's, you know, I feel like I'm throwing a pebble into the ocean hoping to create a tsunami of change. But I get feedback from people that are like, no, this is important because it's our, you know, connective tissue. It's the way we, like, I really need you to do this, to put this out there, you know, then I don't feel as alone. And I think we're right now, one of the biggest things that we're struggling with is this solitary it's easy to be afraid. It's easy to kind of go into your own personal shell and feel disconnected from other people because we have different opinions, or because we're you know, the million ways that we're isolated, and the ways that we have the false sense of connection through our telephones and computers that really, in many ways, kind of furthers that isolation because you can be sort of stuck with the screen and not look up. And, you know, I get on the subway and I look around and every person is looking down at a screen. And I try to make it an activity, just sit there and look around just to go like, yeah, I'm actually on a train with other people and I'm not absorbed in my phone, which is very isolating.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is Eisner Award-winning artist Peter Cooper, author and artist of numerous books, editorial cartoons, many illustrations. But we're talking tonight about his new book. It is beautiful. Wish We Weren't Here, Postcards from the Apocalypse. Peter, I love this list of artists that you drew inspiration from. I just want to read it because it's such an interesting mix of people. Daumier, Francisco Goya, and people who, if you don't know those two artists, please look them up. Thomas Nast, one of the great newspaper cartoonists who protested against Tammany Hall and lots more. Lynn Ward. Can you talk about Lynn Ward for a minute?
Well, he was one of the early wardless woodcut artists that people like Will Eisner, who created The Spirit, referenced as they showed the way to the graphic novel. Before him, there was a guy named Frans Masereel in Belgium in 1915, who was doing these woodcut wordless stories. And but Lynn Ward's God's Man was the name of the book that I first saw that told this long story about, you know, an artist making a deal with the devil to become famous. And it's all done in wordless woodcuts. And it was one of the books that I saw that inspired my interest in that kind of style, and also which I applied to when I did Kafka's Metamorphosis and a lot of other stories. Also just the using the wordless aspect of storytelling, which I was enamored with in seeing Spy vs. Spy and Mad Magazine, which I've ironically, as I no doubt mentioned, I'm still doing. I just did the cover of the next issue and a 2-page story. And they keep on, Mad keeps on seeming to be on the edge of dying, and then its death are highly overrated, and it keeps on coming back, mostly by subscription, but people can still find it at, say, Barnes & Noble, or it's available somewhere. But it's I'm still really enjoying that whole process of that kind of wordless storytelling that first inspired me. But there's just so much you can do without text that is an international language. It's one of the things I love about the wordless comics, and especially, you know, like I said, I don't speak French, but I'm working for a French publication, and you know, I'm fully able to communicate with the audience there. I'm on my fifth year of doing this strip. One of the things I also threw into Wish We Weren't Here is quotes from different, just little bits of quotes. Like there's one from E.O. Wilson that says, "Destroying rainforest for economic gain is like burning a Renaissance painting to cook a meal." And another really good one by a guy, McPherson: "If you think the economy is more important than the environment, try holding your breath while counting your money." And that goes with an image of a woman pulling the arm on a one-armed bandit gambling machine, and the various images go flipping around, and when they come up, like lightning bolt, hurricane, and fire, then out blasts, instead of money, flames. And the whole machine is sort of like a giant polluting monster. So those are the kind of couplings I do. Another, I mentioned that I have the source material for the different images I do, and one of the source materials that I was very happy to include at the bottom of an image that shows somebody throwing out a plastic water bottle, and then the next panel shows a guy sweeping up a huge amount of plastic water bottles, and then the third panel shows basically an earth mover trying to push mountains of plastic bottles, and the last shot is Earth just pretty much made up, designed with plastic bottles. And the reference is, how bad for the environment can throwing away one plastic bottle be? 30 million people wonder. And that was from The Onion.
We're going to run out of time, and I want to make sure we talk about World War III. How would you describe World War III? Hello?
I'm sorry. What, say that again?
How would you describe World War III?
Oh, World War III is a magazine that I co-founded with my friend, childhood friend, Seth Tobachman, in 1979. And we started it when we were in art school. We were doing political comics and kind of underground comics, and there was no outlet for that kind of material. The underground comic scene had collapsed.
Yep.
And so we had done a fanzine growing up. I mean, Seth and I grew up in Cleveland, one street away. Our fathers both taught at Case Western Reserve. And we were connected through our interest in comics. And we did a fanzine starting when we were 11, and we did several issues of that over the years. And so when we got to art school, ended up there together, we incidentally, when we hit the wall of, we can't get published, we were like, you know, we know how to publish. And it wasn't just our own work. It was also seeing work that was up on posters on the wall. There are other people who were doing some not dissimilar types of work. And we wanted basically to plant a flag that said Ronald Reagan was on his way to public office. This was a guy who we thought was clownish in 1976, and by 1980 he was the president. That sounds familiar. For recent current events, and so we decided we self-published this magazine. We called it World War III Illustrated because at the time there was a hostage crisis in Iran, and we really thought we were about to go to war with Russia. We were really, we're talking about bombing Iran, and it was just generally the atmosphere of the bomb again was just hanging over us. And the kind of stories we were doing were there was a lot of apocalyptic tone to it. And a lot of people liked that first issue. We sold it outside the cafeteria at school and then managed to get it into newsstands and comic shops just by walking around with it. And it's other people came to us and said, well, I want to work on the magazine too. And issue after issue. Wow. That
Peter, the amazing thing for me is that World War III Illustrated is still publishing.
Yeah, that part is completely crazy, and I can't fully explain it except that the subject matter that we've all been wanting to address, there's still not outlets for doing, say, a long-form piece that you can, in comics form like this, that there's not publications out there that would say, take a 10-page comic on the Middle East situation or about your mother dying, or about all the different things that we cover. We each issue has a theme to it, the latest issue being about the Mideast situation, and that we've ended up with a lot of artists that you normally would think wouldn't have a problem getting in mainstream publications like Art Spiegelman have ended up doing work for World War III. And the latest issue has a piece that Art Spiegelman and Joe Sacco did in collaboration. Ben Catcher, who won the MacArthur Award.
I've interviewed Ben Catcher in years past. He's one of my favorite comic artists.
He's a really fascinating figure in comics.
And there's a really interesting comic by you and him about having your first shared anti-Semitic experience.
Yeah, which is I thought was an appropriate thing, bring another dimension into the story. And that what was particularly interesting about that comic, and I was very thrilled about, was I did this comic about it, this encounter we had. Ben Catcher lives across the street from my studio, and I was out walking, and I bumped into him, and then this other guy came up and started a scree of,
God,
like, wanted to know if we were Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, do you believe in Jesus? And, and I was like, do you have a problem with that? I believe in Jesus. I'm like, no, I don't have a problem. He was a Jew. Yes. But the thing that was funny was I showed Ben my comic strip, and he said, that's not what happened. And so we have this Rashomon factor in the issue, where he did then a 2-page strip that was his experience of this, which was coming from a completely different angle. But this is actually one of the aspects of the magazine itself, is that we do, as much as it's clearly a left-leaning perspective on the work, and that we're looking for work that on these themes, that it's certainly not going to have there's not going to be any Ku Klux Klan member doing a strip for us, but we do have differing perspectives on the same material. And we're the latest issue, which I'm co-editing, is on animal rights, and it's called Animal Rights, Planet Wrongs is the theme.
Is Sue Coe going to be in? Is Sue Coe going to be in that?
Sue Coe is the center of the issue. We have we're doing a giant interview with her and going to do a survey of her career and activities.
She's amazing. She's amazing.
Animal rights. She is, you know, been a driving force in that area, and you know, one of the, I mean, she's the Kathy Kolwitz of political art, and she's been contributing to World War III going back to our fifth issue, and this is our 55th issue we're working on.
We're completely out of time. For the benefit of the audience, I want to recommend a book. It's a hefty book called World War III Illustrated 1979 to 2014, which is essentially a huge compendium with a really useful timeline at the end. And you could really see all the issues that World War III was involved in. And with that, unfortunately, we're completely out of time, and I haven't even begun to talk about your book.
Well, part five. One thing I would say, if people look up World War III Illustrated, just make sure you add the Illustrated after World War III, so you don't, because there's a lot of material out there
about World War III.
But it has to be Illustrated, or you're going to be going down the rabbit hole.
Whoops. My returning guest tonight is Eisner Award-winning artist Peter Cooper, author of numerous books, editorial cartoons, magazine covers, and many other illustrations. But tonight, we've been talking about his new book, Wish We Weren't Here, Postcards from the Apocalypse. Peter, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.